Ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They're dietitian approved and ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes. So you can feel right and feel great, no matter what life throws at you. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. Lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals. Based on a randomized, controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto, results will vary depending on diet and exercise. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-ons. Reach your goals this year with ingredients you can trust and convenience that can't be beat. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use code FACTORPODCAST to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
Merkle Media.
Lashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to March 2022. Episode 216, our prison pedo pimp problem. If you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible gold and silver, you should probably talk to our sponsors over at Wise Wolf. Get in the Wolfpack Auto Buy Program at www.macroaggressions.gold. Enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
Afrodita!
I have sent 6 of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with 2 German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on iconic Rockfin, Odyssey, or band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. I know you've got literally a million options out there. We certainly do appreciate it. Hey, if you want to check out what's going on iconic, there is a link in the description that'll get you 10 days of free viewing. Just take a peek, see what you think. It's like the Netflix of the alternative media. They're doing all kinds of iconic original series, iconic movies. There's a lot of content creators that you recognize. They're over there. David Icke, all of his stuff is over there, obviously. And it's a pretty outstanding resource for you. So if you think you've seen it all on the internet, or you're just looking for some new content to dig into, just click that link in the description box for iconic and go take a look and see what you think. And they'll give you 10 days to try it out. If you don't like it, they'll let you go, but I think you'll like it. They've been nice enough to give Macroaggressions a show there since we started, and really since just about they started too. We're a couple months, they're a couple months older than we are. So we definitely appreciate the support of Iconic. So thanks, guys. Oh, and by the way, they're coming to America like King Joffrey Jaffur, I guess. I don't know. There may be rose petals. I think for David Icke, you can throw rose petals. That's fine. Might be a bit much, but you know, he'll get over it. And thank you to our sponsors, My Patriot Supply. You know, there was a time when we could kind of laugh at the preppers and say, you people are planning for the apocalypse that's never going to come. Well, listen, I don't know. I don't know if the shit is going to hit the fan or not, but I will tell you what, I've never felt more uncomfortable about the future than I feel right now. Not the future that I have any control over, but the future that the World Economic Forum and these maniacs running our governments have planned for us. And I know that they are interested in getting a lot of us removed from this planet. And I don't mean sending us to the moon, though that may very well be an option at some point. But I think they want bad things for us. And I think that we should be prepared. And whether you do it through my link at preparewithmacroaggressions.com or you do it elsewhere, I really don't care. This is a resource for you. If you are interested, you can save money on a 4-week supply of food. You can save money on a 3-month supply of food. You can get seeds there. You can get water filtration, air filtration devices, emergency lighting, like really whatever you need, you can get it there. So all I ask is that you start thinking about this stuff. I've been like a insane lunatic talking about this pretty much at the beginning of every show for almost 2 years. I just want us to not fall into that trap of unpreparedness and normalcy bias where you think that just because yesterday was fine and today was fine, tomorrow would be fine. Tomorrow more than likely will be fine. And I'm hoping that it remains that way. But I'm not naive and I don't want to go into this unprepared. So I'll tell you what, I have prepared myself for what's coming. Am I fully prepared? Is there room for improvement? Oh yeah, absolutely. There are other things that I need to do, but I'm prioritizing. And for me, the priority is with food. I think the priority for you guys should be with food as well. So just go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. They've got buckets there of food that you can just buy. It's good for 25 years. It's not going to go bad if these maniacs in office don't get us, maybe a hurricane or a tornado will. So you're always going to be hooked up for that. You're not going to get any credit for it, not with your family, unless something bad happens and then you're a hero. But up until that point, you're going to be a little on the crazy side if you tell them what you're doing. So just tell them you're preparing for like a natural disaster. Don't freak them out and get yourself thinking about this stuff proactively. Also, hey, Helin 951 is our newest sponsor. It's pronounced Helin. It's spelled Halen, HAELAN951.com/macro. Again, they built me a nice little page. There's a little quote from me in there that says, fair warning, the taste is not great. Look, the taste is not great. That's how you know it's working, right? I guess. I mean, I don't think that's their official slogan, but that's what it should be. It's a fermented soy beverage. The soybeans they use come from Mongolia. The process, the lack of pesticides, the lack of GMO soybeans, the fact that it's grown in a particular region where the soil is amazing, and what they do with the fermentation process makes this product really, really potent. They didn't want to water it down and change the flavor and possibly mess up the batch that they'd made. So they left it tasting the way it tastes, which is not great, but it's not the worst thing you've ever had either. So I'll tell you what, I'll make you this deal. Go to this website, read up about it, see what you think, and you make the decision. Helin951.com/macro. The links for all this are going to be in the description, in the show notes, so you can check it out and go to it anytime. Immune support, anti-inflammatory properties, oxidant rich, gut health, energy boost, and detoxification. And a lot of people that have gone through cancer treatments, they are big advocates for this particular drink. They've been making it for 30 years. It's been around. So the word is out. If you are interested, helin951.com/macro to save yourself some money. Well, I don't want to gloat when I see something like this, because I feel like that is probably, I don't know, bad karma, bad business, bad something or other. I don't know. However you want to describe it. But I was pleasantly surprised to see that Jean-Luc Brunel turned up dead in his prison cell. Maybe he wasn't a hotel cell, for all we know. I don't know. You never know with these guys. And it's just nice to see a little bit of, I don't know. I don't know if justice is even the right word for it, because there'll never be justice for the girls that this monster destroyed, or Epstein, or any of these guys. Saddle. There's no good outcome to this when you're a prolific pedophile like Jean-Luc Brunel, and we'll get into kind of who he is and in a minute, but there's just no good ending for this. I suppose hanging in a prison cell is a pretty good ending. I have other ideas. You know, I would have much rather seen him thrown into General Pop in Corcoran or Pelican Bay somewhere, wearing pink boxers turned around backwards. You know, you wear your pink boxers around backwards to tell everyone that the store is open, if you know what I mean. I'd love to see guys like Jean-Luc Brunel and Epstein and their co-conspirators feel a little real justice. A little real justice by some dangerous individuals. Because these guys have had a long run with not a whole lot of interference from the police. And that is, of course, not accidental. They have done this because, I mean, they have this protection because police forces, not all the cops in there, but I'm talking about the ones at the top. The ones at the top are placed there for a reason. The people say, this is, there's some people that are off limits. You don't touch them. If you bring in any of these people for any reasons, you call me. We come in, we sort this out. That's why Epstein gets the sweetheart deal that he does. Not because he's a good guy, not because he necessarily bribed anyone, though he did spend a lot of money down there at the police station. But the people in positions of power inside the police departments are high-ranking Freemasons. Everybody knows that. That's not even a secret. So when you have the ability, when you have somebody at the top of all of these smaller pyramids being like regionalized police forces, you don't have to have all the cops on the payroll. You just have to have the top guy doing what you're saying. And of course, the top guy wouldn't be the top guy if he wasn't going to be the type of guy that would do what you told him to do. Because you could pick from any of them. And this idea that I just did a good job out in the field and I was rewarded and promoted. Stop. That there's a finish line to that. You only go so high. You know, the glass ceiling that women talk about crashing up against this glass ceiling. Well, there's a glass ceiling for men too. When you're in these particular organizations, law enforcement, court systems, things like that. If you don't play, obviously politics, if you don't play ball, there's only so far you can go. And then you hit that imaginary ceiling, or that ceiling that you can't see, but it's most definitely there holding you from rising any further. So that's why guys like Epstein make it as long as they make it, and Jean-Luc Brunel. So he ran the Paris franchise of the Brownstone operations for intelligence. He had a modeling agency. A lot of modeling agencies are cover for trafficking. Not all of them. I grew up in Southern California. I have relationships with people, both professional and personal, in some of the biggest agencies in the world, or some of the biggest agencies in Los Angeles. So I know they're not. The guys that are running, you know, some of the guys that are the agents there, good guys, not all bad guys. Okay. I want to be crystal clear about that. But, and there's the main business, you know, the modeling agencies, which is a real thing. It's a real business. Obviously, we know it's a real industry. And you can make a lot of money in running a modeling agency. But if you want to make serious money, like private jets money, then you open up a sort of, let's just call it the dark web version of your modeling agency. And that is trafficking. You know, got you a gig, got you a 6-month gig in Japan, you know, I'm going to put you in the model's apartment and, you know, you're going to be sharing it here and you're going to go and you'll go on calls all day. And then I know what this, I mean, a lot of that stuff is totally fine, right? I'm not, there's a lot of that stuff is totally on the up and up. But I also knew somebody that went the other route and said, you're going to pay me $80,000 for 2 months to go to Brunei. And all I have to do is look hot and stand around in the palace where the Sultan of Brunei and his family and his psychotic kids and everything are. Sure. Okay, I'll do that. So this happened a long time ago. I had a conversation with a woman who was involved in that, who did that. And I said, well, how do you get out? She goes, well, they take your passports. And I go, yeah, I've heard. How do you get out? She goes, there is one trick for getting out. And I'm like, tell me. She's like, I got fat. And I was like, oh my God, that's genius. Because as she's explaining this to me, she's not fat. She's obviously was a model, was there, was sent to Brunei, and came home and is telling me this story as someone who had been there herself. And she discovered that the best way to get sent home is to get yourself fat. Now, I don't know how you get fat in Brunei when you're sitting around the palace, but apparently she figured it out. And I said, did you get to keep the money? She goes, yeah. Yeah, I get to keep the money. I said, were there some bad things going on there? She goes, yeah. Yeah, there's some bad stuff going on. So there's a trafficking component to this that doesn't get talked a lot about. You see Victoria's Secret and they've got the fashion show and all that stuff. And then you go, oh, well, that looks so glamorous. Victoria's Secret, that's amazing. I wonder if I could ever get, you know, I wonder if I could ever be a model with Victoria's Secret. That'd be amazing. Like, you know who owns the company, right? Les Wexner, Jeffrey Epstein's partner. Do you really want to go down that route? I'm not saying that everybody that becomes an angel is has to fuck Les Wexner. That would be too much. Like, nobody wants it that bad, I assure you. Dude looks like a goblin, okay? So, but I guess some people want to make it. You want to make it high. Some people are fucking Harvey Weinstein, so I guess Les Wexner isn't that far out of the equation. But this was what Jean-Luc Brunel was involved in. Now, he was a very generous individual. If you were his friend, he was a good friend to have. If you were his friend, if you weren't his friend, he would traffic you to the worst people in the world. If you were his good friend, like Jeffrey Epstein, he once gave Jeffrey Epstein a present. Now, you might be asking yourself, what do you get the man who has everything? Well, what you get the man who has everything, if you're Jean-Luc Brunel and the person you're shopping for is Jeffrey Epstein, you get him 13-year-old triplets from France that do not speak English for you to abuse. That's what we're working with here. Okay, just so that we're crystal clear on who this guy was and what he was doing. And I don't want to hear anyone say, well, how do we know he wasn't just running a legit modeling operation? Well, legit modeling operators don't give 13-year-old girls to convicted child traffickers and consider that to be, you know, a good thing. In fact, Jean-Luc Brunel, over the time that he spent as a close friend and associate of Jeffrey Epstein, is said to have sent him thousands of women, of girls. Let me rephrase that. I said women. I don't mean that. Children. They're under 18. You know, Epstein likes them in that 13, 14, 15-year-old age range. He's not interested in 22-year-olds. Ugh. You know? So when Brunel is sending Epstein over 1,000 kids, then you know that this is part of a much larger operation than just some, he's not just some dirtbag photographer in Paris who put a sign on his door saying models wanted and just, you know, turned it into something. No. That's not how it goes. But in keeping with their lack of originality, it is interesting to see that Jean-Luc Brunel was found in a prison cell hanging with the cameras turned off. Like, I feel like I might have seen this movie before. It's a little too on the nose for me, you know. It's a little too Jeffrey Epstein 2 Electric Boogaloo type for me. I personally would have held them to a higher standard. I would have expected a much different story. But that's what you get. These guys just are tying up loose ends. And, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell, I still have this sneaking suspicion that something is going to happen to her and she's going to get whisked away out the back door. I wish I didn't think that. I really do. But, you know, this is a person that had, you know, the contacts to high, powerful, important people were really Ghislaine Maxwell's contacts, more so than Epstein's. I mean, Epstein knew the people and got to know them over time, but the real introduction, when he took this to the next level, was with the help of the Maxwell family. And the Maxwell family, as you may or may not know, was deeply dysfunctional and filled with a ton of abuse. Robert Maxwell was a psychopath of the highest order, beating the shit out of his kids left, right, and center. But he loved Ghislaine, named a yacht after her, then had the decency to get himself thrown naked off the back of the yacht, more than likely murdered by the Mossad in the Canary Islands. So he's just keeping it real, right? These guys all, there's one way out for them. You know, it's like the gangs always say, blood in, blood out, man. You can't operate in this world and not expect to be hanging in a prison cell or having your bloated, lifeless body discovered floating around off the coast of Spain, you know, or Africa, I should say. So anyway, that's where we are with Jean-Luc Brunel, 74 years old, hangs himself in a Paris prison cell with the cameras not working. Gah, foiled again. If only we could find a company that made cameras that worked well. Maybe the prisons, and this is just my opinion, but maybe the prisons should not partner up with the companies that they're currently using. The company that, by all accounts, makes the same cameras that capture Bigfoot. Like, maybe let's step into the 21st century and get cameras that work, have higher resolution, you know, all those things. Hell, they've got 400 million cameras just in China that are facial recognition cameras. So why don't we use some of that? You know, why don't we take some of that technology instead of, you know, it looks like people are taking pictures of Bigfoot with their disposable cameras in their back pocket. So, oh, those wacky prison guys, when they hang the pedophiles, they like to turn the cameras off. Film it. You thought Pamela and Tommy Lee was a hot selling video. I would pay good money to watch the Epstein hanging, for sure. I'm just saying. So, you know, I want to talk about this prison pedo pimp problem that we have. Because it's tempting to think that when Epstein went away, it all went away. But that's not the case. Now, Epstein wasn't the first. He wasn't the first running the East Coast franchise of this. Roy Cohn was doing this before Epstein was. Now, it was a little bit of a variation. It was more of a homosexual blackmail ring as opposed to Epstein's, which is more young women for dirty old heterosexual men and women. Or I guess homosexual women, too. I guess that happened quite a bit there, too. But Roy Cohn, who, if you don't know, I mean, you want to talk about, like, a picture tells a thousand words. You remember the first time you saw the I guess, passport picture, mugshot, whatever you want to call it, the picture of Muhammad Atta? And you went, damn, that dude looks like dead behind the eyes. He had those like serial killer eyes. And to be crystal clear, I don't think Muhammad Atta flew the planes into the Pentagon, into the World Trade Center or anything like that. I'm just talking about the picture and the image of him. When you see that and you see his eyes and you go, that guy looks super dangerous, that's the same way you'll feel if you go and find pictures of Roy Cohn. He's got those same dead, lifeless eyes. And apparently he was a psychopath of the highest order. A lawyer, Trump's lawyer for many years, taught Trump a lot of tactics. Go on the offense, always claim victory, even in the face of overwhelming defeat, just say you won, you know, just all that crazy shit that Trump does that people go, ugh, that's so infuriating. That's Roy Cohn. That's Roy Cohn who taught him to do that. Now, Roy Cohn was his lawyer, and he was involved in quite a bit of public hearings. Like, what? I mean, he was a well known guy. He was like, like a Rudy Giuliani character, which is to say that really Rudy Giuliani is a horrible, despicable human, psychopathic human being as well. But this isn't about him, because as far as I know, Rudy isn't running a trafficking operation, a blackmail trafficking and enslavement operation, the way Epstein was and the way Roy Cohn was. But it's that similar thing. Prominent New York attorneys, knows everybody, knows where the bodies are buried, in part because they put some of the bodies there and made decisions on who gets free, you know, who walks free and doesn't get prosecuted, made decisions on who we go after hardcore. That's Rudy Giuliani. There's a lot of overlap with Roy Cohn in that sort of mentality. So he comes on the scene. He's running a homosexual blackmail entrapment operation. Now, this is earlier. This is like 60s, 70s, right? Early 80s. And that was a thing back then, right? If you were straight, I mean, if you were actually gay, but you were presented to the world as straight, you needed to keep up appearances. Now, that happens all the time in Hollywood too. You know, I mean, there's a plenty of Hollywood marriages that they portray people as being something that they're not, you know, like Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. And you know, that's like a put together marriage. Those people are, you know, it's not what it appears. Hollywood does that. And politics does that as well. And so when you've got the dirt on somebody like Roy Cohn would, about someone actually being a closeted homosexual, that was enough to destroy someone's career. Nowadays, it's not that big a deal. You just go, eh, whatever. But back then, you know, early on, it was like you catch somebody cheating on their wife, and that's a lot. I mean, and that still works. If somebody catches you cheating on your wife and holds that over your head, they can make you do things that you don't want to do. I would suggest there's a limit to that, though. At some point, they can't make you go rob a bank and get yourself put in prison for 30 years. You go, I just tell my wife I'm cheating. I'm not doing it. So there's a line. And there's a line with homosexuality, too. But there's not a line when it comes to pedophilia. There's no expiration date on pedophilia, we hope. We hope not, you know. God knows that, according to Tom DeLay, former Republican member of the House of Representatives, he said that there was a real coordinated push to normalize 12 perversions, including bestiality and pedophilia and things like that. So according to him, they are trying to normalize that. But in my world that I'm living in currently, there's no expiration date on pedophilia. So if you get the goods on someone who's doing that, you've got them for life, right? So it's the evolution of the honey trap, where it goes from catching people cheating on their wives to catching people that are closeted homosexuals to catching people that are closeted pedophiles. And I don't know what the next step is from that. I mean, I guess bestiality, I guess, is as bad, if not worse. I don't know. But according to Tom DeLay, they're trying to normalize that. Must be a lot. Lindsey Graham must have a lot of pictures of him with sheep. You know what I mean? He's like, God damn it, we got to normalize this shit before I get run out of town on a rail. You know, you could just see Miss G saying that. That's what they call him, by the way, Miss G. You know why. So Roy Cohn ran this, but there's, and Trump knew about it, of course. It's his mentors running it, right? So he knew about it, and he knew who Epstein was. And he knew kind of that dance that you do when you're a Donald Trump figure and you're interacting with Epstein and you're both in New York and you're in that social circle. Then you drop down the East Coast and you wind up in Palm Beach and you're part of that social circle, which has a lot of overlap as well. So these guys knew each other, right? They knew, you know, Trump, you've got Trump saying that Jeffrey, he's great. He loves the ladies, likes them, you know, a little young. And that's how you talk about that stuff without, you know, winding up in the trunk of somebody's car. So you've got that happening in New York City. The old guy, Roy Cohn, he didn't make it past the 80s, right? He's dead. He fades away. The new guy, he steps in, financed by Les Wexner. That's Jeffrey Epstein. And both guys have ties to Jewish mafia, whether this be Roy Cohn or Les Wexner, who is running a crime family, one of the Jewish mafia's crime family. Like if you watch The Godfather and you see the crime families, or you see like the Sinaloa cartel and you go, oh, that's different than the Medellin cartel. And you go, oh, there's differences there. In the world of the mafia, of the Jewish mafia that has a huge amount of control and power, Wexner's running one of the crime families. Okay. And Epstein is his conduit to the entrapment world. He's the perfect guy for that. He's already broken as a human being, mentally defective. He has no soul. There are no lines in the sand that Jeffrey Epstein won't cross. He's got access to money. He's got access to powerful people. He's the perfect guy for it, actually, if you think about it. He's a little on the dumb side, but that's okay. He makes up for it by being a bit street smart and understanding how to navigate these, you know, to be a bit of a chameleon. He didn't really fool the science guys. The science guys all thought he was a dipshit, which of course he was, but he knew just enough to make it look like he was part of these circles. So we've got Brunel. He's in Europe, well, France particularly. He's running a wing of blackmail with getting people involved with his young girls. I think time will tell how deep he was with intelligence. Has to be part of intelligence. You simply will not be allowed to operate an operation like that, that people knew was run. I mean, by the time it gets to us, you know, then, you know, law enforcement knew about it. You know that the higher ups in government, you know, they were watching him. Jean-Luc Brunel is not allowed to operate as long as he operated without the express written consent of whoever's running the show in France and maybe even Major League Baseball, just to be on the safe side. But so you've got him. You've got Savile running the operation in the UK, child trafficking, procurer of children for the rich and powerful, including Ted Heath, including Prince Charles, including Andrew, including Lord Mountbatten, all of them. You don't have the sort of access Jimmy Savile has to the royal family unless you are providing a service to the royal family that they desperately need. And of course, we know about who the royal family is. They're a very dangerous group. And Savile provided them with just an extra layer of cover, just another layer, you know, so that they're not putting ads in Craigslist saying, looking for young boys, 8 to 10, please apply. You know what I mean? So you got to have Savile there to manage that process. And in exchange for that, you're never going to be prosecuted. Jimmy Savile never saw the inside of a prison cell. He never did. Jean-Luc Brunel does. Jeffrey Epstein does. But they're not dealing with the queen. Savile is. She's the top of the pyramid here, you know. So this is the reality of what we're living through. It's not limited to this. We have additional people that you may or may not know of that are also running franchises. Let's talk about a new guy that isn't on most people's radar, but he will be after we get done with this episode, and that's Peter Nygaard. Now, I might have talked about him here before. I know I've talked to Sean Atwood about him maybe three or four times on his show. Peter Nygaard is, he's just right out of that mold. He's a very similar character. It's like this swashbuckling, long gray-haired fashion designer from Winnipeg who just happens to have an island in the Bahamas, Party Island, party house, always throwing parties, Bohemian cops in his pocket. You know, that's what you have to do. That's when the cartels were running drugs. Once they finally figured out the Bahamas would be a good place to land and everything, they had the Bahamian police in their pocket back then. My assumption is that Nygaard had the same sort of access to them as well. And by the way, just for a fashion designer, the worst sense of taste I've ever seen. I mean, he looks like, oh my, just go take a look at his stuff. How do you make that much money selling shitty clothes? Like, apparently he figured out how to do it, but he had been living pretty much full time. His family had turned against him. His family was tired of being like put through the ringer, and they left Peter Nygaard to sort of be on his own. Now he's a guy in his 70s as well. He is, he was running a trafficking, kidnapping, operation through the Bahamas. He was deeply involved in that. He was raping children, as you do when you're running a brownstone operation like this. And he was being extradited to the United States from Canada when, he's in a prison cell right now. He is sitting in a prison cell because he has been arrested for trafficking. You see, the wheels are coming off these operations. These guys are no longer needed. When you have deepfake technology, the sort of CGI limitations that they have now, which is damn near unlimited, the idea of needing to catch Senator What's-His-Face in bed with a 13-year-old boy is less necessary now because you can just make that scene happen digitally and it'll look just as real as anything. So I'm not trying to say that these things aren't happening anymore. I'm sure they are still happening. I'm just saying that the intelligence agencies aren't in as big of a hurry to defend them than they were maybe several years ago when they needed this intelligence. I think they probably use them as long as they can use them. And once they become more trouble than they're worth, then they just raid the place and put them in prison. Unless you're working for the Queen, like Saville. And then they bury you at a 45 degree angle, which is totally weird. Besides being a rich, deviant, flamboyant, pedophile weirdo with an island in the Caribbean, Peter Nygaard has another similarity to Jeffrey Epstein, and that is that they both owned 727 airplanes. Now, I've talked about this before. I'll talk about it again because it's important. There's a reason why this is happening. The 727 airplanes are very specific. They were big back in the late 60s, back in the 60s and early 70s. They were very big because TWA used them. Transworld Airlines. They're no longer in business, but they were a big airline here in America and worldwide too. And one of the things that they liked about the design of this 727 is it had three engines. It has two. It has an engine on each of the I guess it's the back tail, and a third engine right in the middle of it. So it's a very unusual looking plane. It has three engines, not two, not four. It has three. And they're all back. They're all in the back of it where the vertical tail is. In fact, one of them is built into the vertical tail. And because of that, it has an S-shaped duct where the air goes in and it goes out. It comes in one way, cools the engine, and goes out the other way. So because of the ducting that this airplane has, it is, they specifically designed this airplane so that it could fly into smaller airports, airports with shorter runways. And one of the features of that, since they're not going to be flying these planes necessarily into JFK or LAX, one of the features that they built into this was a rear folding staircase so that the passengers can go out the back of the airplane. You just go down some stairs and you go out, you're on the tarmac, and then they lead you into the airport itself. So if you have the jetway, the big mobile ramp that can come and like connect right to the side of the airplane, like most of us are used to when you get on and off an airplane at a traditional larger airport, you can also move one of those rolling staircases up to it. So if you're in a small airport that doesn't have access to the newer technology, you've got a way out. You can always get out of this plane through the back. They put that staircase down. In fact, they put the staircase down in the back, and they pull the mobile staircase, you know, like the one that's like kind of built onto a car. They pull that one right up to the front. And so people are getting off both directions. So it's extremely efficient when you're getting on and off an airplane, or getting off an airplane, I should say. I don't think they let you get on it that way. But so anyway, why is this important? Well, because nobody uses these planes anymore. They're 50 years old. They're unnecessary when you've got all the money in the world and you can afford Gulfstreams and Learjets and Falcons and all this stuff. The idea of buying a 50-year-old, literally a 50-year-old 727 plane and all the maintenance that can come with that seems unusual. Not a smoking gun, but just unusual. Especially when you consider Epstein had a G6 and a G5. And you know, that seems like, I take that back. He had a G5 and a G4 and the Lolita Express, which was the 727. So Peter Nygaard had one too. And you got to find the pictures of it. It is the tackiest shit I've ever seen. It's all purple and mirrored, and he's got a stripper pole in there. I mean, the guy looks, you know, he's got that long, he kind of looks like if you combined Siegfried and Roy together with like gray hair. He's got a very Siegfried, no offense to Siegfried, who, you know, I don't know him, but he's got a very Siegfried vibe to him. I don't know. Maybe it's the Canadian part. I know that he seems European, but I don't know. But I'm less concerned with him looking like Siegfried and or Roy, and more concerned with what the fuck he's doing with a 727 airplane. Because back to that staircase, it is a rear deploying staircase that can be deployed during flight. Okay, during flight, anywhere 10,000 feet and below, this staircase can be deployed and it won't depressurize the cabin. I'll be honest, I don't understand all of the engineering behind that. I don't know why that is. I just know that it is the way it is. And the CIA loved these planes in Vietnam. They used them, the Air America, all that stuff. The planes they were using to drop things off, you know, that was this plane. The plane that D.B. Cooper hijacked, put the parachute on, and then parachuted out of, that was a 727 as well. The reason why he picked that plane, he knew you could put the staircase down during flight and jump off of it. So again, in and of itself, owning a 727 airplane doesn't mean anything. But when Jeffrey Epstein's got one, when Peter Nygaard's got one, and when Donald Trump has one, I start asking questions. You know, I mean, it just seems a bit much. When these guys have all the money in the world, and it's not a matter of how much can I spend on a plane? You can spend whatever you want on a plane. Epstein's got other planes. He had three planes. So why the old jalopy? Oh, well, we can transport a lot of people around. Yeah, I get that. But why the one with the staircase that folds down? Are you throwing problems out of the back of that? Are you throwing children out of the back of that? Are you dropping weapons with parachutes? What are you doing? What exactly is happening with these very specific airplanes? And why did Les Wexner buy Southern Air Transport, the CIA's airline, flying a fleet of 727s, and relocate it to Columbus, Ohio? You know, Les Wexner owned the Lolita Express before Jeffrey Epstein did. Why? Smuggling? Is this like the Millennium Falcon where you open up the floorboards and you can put smuggled merchandise in there? I don't think so. I know that when you've got the same airplanes that the CIA loves and human traffickers love, and you've got Les Wexner, the head of the Jewish mafia, or at least one of the families, who is relocating the company to Columbus, Ohio, which is where he is, which is where he lives. And this is the same airline that's been involved in like Iran-Contra and the CIA smuggling out of Vietnam and everything. This is a really fascinating angle. And so I think that these human traffickers are up to no good with this. I don't know if what Nygaard was doing. But again, fashion industry, just like Wexner. Trafficking operation, just like Epstein. 727 airplane, just like Epstein and Wexner and Trump. What the fuck is going on? I think it's a reasonable question to ask. And I've got the flight logs of Epstein. I know that he took 345 flights in 4 years. It's a flight every 3.4 days. And I went and tracked his landings. I know he was in New York City 119 times, Palm Beach 71 times, Virgin Islands 60 times, Paris 30 times. He's going to visit Jean-Luc Brunel. Are you? I mean, Epstein had an apartment there. Northern New Mexico 11 times, Boston 27 times, Long Island 5 times. I know that you've gone from Paris to Vienna and stayed for 5 hours and then left. I know you've gone from Paris to Slovakia, stayed for 5 hours and then left. What are you doing? What is Epstein doing there? Picking up Brunel girls? Nobody flies from Paris to Morocco for 9 hours, except Epstein. So, you know, what are we doing? Who else is involved? That's my real question. So that takes me to somebody. Takes me to a name that you may or may not want to wrap your head around as being involved in this too, and that's Hugh Hefner. This is going to be a tough one for some people to hear, but you got to hear it. Because Hugh Hefner was not a good guy, okay? He's got that image, he's got the robe, and he's just this guy who likes to hang out in the Holmby Hills and have crazy-ass parties, Saturday night parties, movie night Fridays. Ask Corey Feldman. He'll tell you all about it. Yeah, we'd go over there every Friday night. It was movie night. Oh, that was the place to be, you know? Yeah. All good, right? Oh, what happens in the grotto stays in the grotto. Really? Is that really true? What were they digging up during the renovations there at the Playboy Mansion? That new guy bought it and then bought it for like $100 million and left. Had to leave Hef in there till Hef died, and then Hef died, and then they started doing renovations. They dug the fuck out of that place. Man, they dug deep down into some holes. I want to know what was going on in there. And don't tell me plumbing. Don't. I've spent too much time in real estate to fall for that horse shit. I don't want to hear that plumbing is the problem. It's not the problem. I want to know what's going on underground there. Hugh Hefner was deeply involved in Project Monarch. Mind control. He was involved in MK Ultra. He was quite obviously involved in what they call sex kitten programming, which is an offshoot of MK Ultra. And I would say that that leads to targeted individuals as well. After you start running these operations, you'll always find yourself in a situation where whoever he's working for in the government, CIA with MK Ultra and Project Monarch would be also running targeted individual campaigns as well. So what are they doing? What were they doing at the Playboy Mansion? I mean, we've got underground facilities there. We've got underground tunnels. We have tunnels leading to other houses in the neighborhood. That is confirmed and has been known for 40 years, leading to James Caan's house and shit like that. What's going on? We've got a quite obvious and pretty low level blackmail operation happening there. I mean, you can't go to the Playboy Mansion. To be clear, I've never been. Nobody would invite me. Why would you invite me? You know, but I would have gone. I would have gone to see what's going on there. But look, if you think that you're just going to do coke, you're just going to do a couple lines with these bunnies and nobody cares and nobody's ever going to know, you are out of your mind. Okay. There are cameras everywhere. There are microphones everywhere. That place was a gigantic, that was Epstein Island before Epstein Island was Epstein Island. You know what I mean? Like, this was a huge entrapment operation. Now, it's not to say that people didn't have a great time. And frankly, I'm not even saying that they were doing anything that was all that bad. You know, if you're a guy and you go, we're talking about the Playboy Mansion, which is a lot different than what Epstein was doing, where he's flying in children. Okay. So the age range makes a difference. But if you think about this goes back to kind of where we started with this, which is the Playboy Mansion was a perfect honey trap for the time, for that era, because that was a time where you could catch some guy cheating on his wife or being a closeted homosexual or doing coke or whatever. And that would be enough to ruin them. It's not these days. They didn't have the, at least in my research, they didn't have the underage component like Epstein had. Thank God, right? Thank God there wasn't another opportunity to abuse children. So for everything that the Playboy Mansion was, thank God it wasn't that. But it was a great brownstone operation, a honeypot, whatever you want to call it, where you get a bunch of people, actors, musicians, models, executives, studio executives, music executives, you get all of them in a situation where you've got them doing something that they shouldn't be doing in the 70s and 80s, early 90s, whatever. And you've got the goods on them. And then you can manipulate them for Playboy's advantage, for the CIA's advantage, for whatever. So there's plenty of opportunities, and there's plenty of stories of people doing bad shit at the Playboy Mansion and it coming back to haunt them in a very quiet way. Because if you're going to run a brownstone operation, it is imperative that people not understand what it is. So you've got to have the cover story. You've got to have the Friday night movie night that wasn't really open to everybody, very select group of people. You got to have Easter brunch there, you know, out on the lawn, and you've got to do all that. You've got to invite the press. You've got to turn it into this big thing. It can't be a honeypot. It's too public for that, but it is. Of course, it is. You have to have that facade to sort of make it look like you're all on the up and up, when in fact you are not. So the Playboy Mansion was part of this. Now, was it the West Coast franchise? I don't know. For a time it was, for sure. But you know, what about guys like, you know, there's other people that have taken it. I mean, Hef wasn't able to run this properly as he got older. But no doubt there's a new breed of person in Hollywood, probably operating right now, more than likely beyond us, you know, beyond our understanding currently, but I'm sure that that is, happening somewhere. So then we've got, let's move on though. We've got, we've got another person who's involved in some devious shit as well. And I already mentioned the royal family. And this is kind of one that a lot of people don't know too much about. But we know about Prince Andrew. And you think that Prince Andrew and his ties to Jeffrey Epstein were bad, and they were. And you might assume he's the worst person in his family when it comes to stuff like that. Not so fast, though. Because Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, his ex-wife, with whom they have two children, Sarah Ferguson is not above suspicion herself. And let me tell you why. She is involved in a charity, a children's charity, called Children in Crisis. It used to be called Street Child. And what this charity does, they love children's charities, don't you know? That the royals, they just can't get enough of the kids. Children in Crisis was started by three people, and it wound up merging with an established organization called Street Child. So Children in Crisis was started by Howard Lutnick, who's the CEO of, Cantor Fitzgerald. Sorry. Cantor Fitzgerald. I don't want to turn this into a 9/11 episode, but if you remember, who lost the most people on 9/11? Cantor Fitzgerald did. Who was the CEO? Howard Lutnick. Why wasn't the CEO there that day? He decided to take his kid to first day of kindergarten. So he wasn't there. Everyone in his office showed up and everyone else died. Sarah Ferguson, who, did I mention Howard Lutnick lived next door to Jeffrey Epstein? Sorry, I must have forgotten that. In New York, owns the house right next to him. But Howard Lutnick wound up starting a charity with Sarah Ferguson. Isn't that nice? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Nothing wrong with that at all. Except that, Sarah Ferguson also had an office in the World Trade Center on the 101st floor and of the North Tower. And she had a logo, like a mascot. For her charity. Her charity was called Chances for Children. This is a different charity. They love charities for children, as I mentioned. And she had this doll named Little Red. And Little Red was sort of like the symbol, like she was the logo for this children's charity. And even though the North Tower was pulverized and turned into a fine powder, Little Red was found in the wreckage. Like a miracle, like a Saudi passport or something. Now, Fergie was in New York City on the morning of 9/11. But again, she also, coincidentally, wasn't in her office. Do you know where she was? She was at the news organization. She was at NBC News giving an interview, just like L. Paul Bremer was. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because Sarah Ferguson is deep in this shit, okay? She starts a charity with Jeffrey Epstein's next-door neighbor, Howard Lutnick, and a guy named Dr. Anthony Wallersteiner, who's the headmaster of the Stowe School. Did I say that right? Yeah. And these three people start a children's charity. They later merge it with Street Child, another children's charity that was started by a gentleman named Peter Daglish. If that name sounds familiar, that's because Peter Daglish worked for the United Nations and is now sitting in a prison cell in Nepal for raping boys. So again, children's charities, raping children. They go well together in this world, in this fucked up world. So forgive me when I hear the Prince Andrew apology, non-apology interview, talking about how he doesn't sweat, you know, his ex-wife is running a child's charity with a convicted child rapist in Peter Dalglish, who can't help them out with their charity anymore, being that he's tied up, maybe literally tied up, in a Nepalese prison cell. So we've got... Oh, and by the way, the Dr. Anthony Wallersteiner, the third member of Sarah's children's charity, the headmaster of Stowe School, who went to this prestigious boarding school? Oh, nobody, just Richard Branson, known to be a dirty pedophile, Lord McAlpine, known to be a dirty pedophile, Sir Peter Hayman, MI6 named him as a pedophile in 1981, and Lord Henniker Major, who was implicated in the Dolphin Square child trafficking rape ring. And this guy is the headmaster of the school that produced all these fine people. Cantor Fitzgerald has a very close relationship with the Stowe School. He's had multiple charity events there. But why wouldn't they? They're partners. The head of Cantor Fitzgerald is partnered with the head of Stowe School, and partnered with Sarah Ferguson. So there are blackmail operations that are running that look a little bit different than what you might be expecting. They don't always happen on an island in rooms that are filled with cameras. Some of them happen in boarding school. Some of them happen when you get the Duchess of York involved, ex-Duchess of York, whatever that means. And I think that, you know, it's tempting to not want to get into this topic. It really is. I debated about whether or not I even wanted to do an episode about this. But look, we can't just ignore this and pretend like it's not a thing and pretend like Jeffrey Epstein's and Jean-Luc Burnell's are just, you know, some big misunderstanding. These things are put there for a reason. They're extremely effective at being used to control people, to get people in compromising situations. What happens in the wake of this is just awful, because they just churn through children and destroy their lives without any thought to that, all so that they can get the dirt on the CFO of some bank somewhere, so that they can get inside information when that guy's going to do X. They want to know about it 2 weeks in advance so they can make some moves or whatever. It's disgusting. And all these people, they all have ties to the intelligence agencies. All of them. You don't operate in this capacity without that. So that's kind of where we are. There will be more Epsteins. There will be more Jean-Luc Burnells. And hopefully they'll be hanging from their prison cells. But I don't bring this topic up necessarily to dwell on it. However, I feel that the first step to making sure that things like this don't happen in the future is to understand that they're happening in the present, understand who's involved, who's behind the scenes making this happen, what they're doing, why they're doing it, and what the signs are. Because with Epstein, one of the things that happened was that these girls were going home saying, I was offered $200 to give some creep a massage and everything. That could have brought it down right there. So it's important for us to recognize, especially if you're a parent, that sometimes, you know, the person that abducts your child and ruins their lives isn't some monster with blood dripping off of his fingernails like you might envision them. Sometimes they live in $12 million houses in Palm Beach or $50 million penthouse townhomes in New York City. And sometimes the people that are involved in this are royals themselves. So let's not pretend that it doesn't exist. Let's acknowledge it, try to understand it so that we can prevent it from happening in the future, and so that we get better at recognizing the signs of an operation happening, so that maybe, just maybe, we can prevent some people from blindly falling into these traps and getting their lives ruined by psychopathic pedophiles working on behalf of our intelligence agencies. If you like this episode and you think it's important for other people to hear it, please take the additional step of sharing it with your friends and family. You can reach out to me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggressions. I'll talk to you all soon.